Blog Talk Radio.
Fly. Good evening. This is Tuesday, November 8th, 2016, and this is the circus show because we are going to be discussing the circus of the 2016 election, and we know we don't have a dog in this fight. Our news analysis this evening will be no surprise to anyone. We will be dealing with the concept that they want us people of color, to vote in order to prove that they are not irrelevant and to legitimize the corruption that is the American empire. And although we people of color lost wars, the results are not forever. Nothing is forever. And that's a quote by one of our panelists this evening, Ralph Pointer. And before we hear Ralph Pointer's credo, let me welcome Sister Ann Lamb, New York City Jericho. Let me welcome Sister Lynn, former political prisoner and the people's lawyer, Lynn Stewart, that is. Let me welcome Larry Pinkney, former political prisoner who got himself out of jail, another jailhouse lawyer and former Black Panther. Let me welcome Tom Syracuse, Manhattan Green Party. And everybody's going to give you the real deal tonight. And so with great pleasure, I pass the mic to Brother Ralph Pointer, new abolitionist movement in the house.
Thank you so much for that, Betty Davis. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our laborers for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up, now is the time. Now, brothers and sisters, and when I say brothers and sisters, I mean, and I repeat and repeat and repeat, those people who have a unity of purpose, and that purpose is to make the world a better place without regard to race, religion, age, gender, etc., etc., etc. And when we say the term political prisoners, we speak of the people who transcended all of those divisions that keep us apart. Political prisoner, those who sacrificed so that we might have a better life. Political prisoners, those who worked hard throughout the world, in every society, to make it better, and were stamped or were trampled on by the corrupt, despotic governments that are in charge or that were in charge. And I think of names like Emiliano Zapata of Mexico. I think of the names of Fidel Castro, Ho, Che, etc. They were once in the same position that we are in. They saw something, they understood the problems, and they did something about it. And most of those who started out doing something about it paid a terrible price. Some won, many lost, but the struggle continues. And I want to talk tonight about the election and about our efforts. And I was just thinking, 54 years ago, I met Lynn Stewart in New York City at a school on Lenox Avenue and 135th Street in Harlem. And as teachers in elementary school, we could see something was terribly wrong. I won't get into any detail about what we saw, but everybody on this program knows what we saw. We saw a community of beautiful, bright children coming into school, the first day of school, like bright pennies. And from that day forward, their brightness was taken off, dulled, if that's a term, a little by day. And after the years of struggling, we saw the prison numbers rise, and we knew we had to do something about it. And just yesterday, 2 days ago, Sunday in Washington, D.C., Betty Davis and I were on a panel, and we spoke about the question of how do we uplift the people of our community, or as a matter of fact, every community. And it went down to the same thing that we started working on 50 years ago, 54 years ago, and the abolitionists started working on after Reconstruction, 1865, all of those many years ago. It boils down to controlling your education system, and with the capitalist system we have today, the economy of your community. It boils down to the same thing. And those who have struggled to get there, many are in jail. We must rectify that. The struggle is the same. It continues, and we have lost it. And we have to analyze over the years why we lost it. How is it that the South lost the war and to this day are still winning the battles of voting, of educational rights, of economic rights? And one of the things that is very instrumental in their victory has been guns. And we are fighting for the hearts and the minds of oppressed people to make them capable of understanding this circumstance. And just before coming on the program this evening, I was watching the returns, the early returns, and I'm going to allow Lynn Stewart to give her projection on what this vote means. And I'm going to start tonight with Larry Pinkney for his interpretation of what is happening this evening. And we're going to, of course, follow up with Tom Syracuse of the Manhattan Green Party, who always has something political and interesting to say about the electoral process. Larry Pinkney, are you in the house? And are you ready to give us words of wisdom regarding the 2016 elections? Larry, are you in the house?
I am, my brother. All I can say, I don't know if I have any words of wisdom, frankly, but let me just say that as far as the so-called, and I repeat, so-called election is concerned, we all know that it's a circus. We all know that it's rigged. We all know that we do not have democracy in the United States. What we have is hypocrisy. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that whoever wins the White House, and I put the word white in quotation marks, whoever wins the White House, in real terms, will be a continuation of Throne Man Barack Obama or George Bush before him. And our job, Let's concentrate on what we must do, because, you know, irrespective, I happen to despise Hillary. Did I say Hillary? Yes, I meant to say Hillary Clinton, because she represents in the most blatant fashion, the repression of the struggle of oppressed people, and most especially oppressed people of color, quote unquote, around the world, from the slaughter of Muammar Gaddafi in Libya to her vote for the the genocide in Iraq, and you know, from what she did and what she supported, she and her husband in what was formerly called Yugoslavia. It's a circus. I don't want to talk about the circus, frankly. We know it's a circus. I want to talk about what we, the people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people must do. First of all, I want to extend, as always, my warm greetings of love and strength and fraternal revolutionary greetings to you, Brother Ralph Poynter, to Sister Professor Betty Davis, to our stalwart people's lawyer, Lynn Stewart, and, of course, looking forward to Ann Lamb, as I always do, and to Joel and all the rest who will be on the program. I want to say all power to the people, as I always do. I don't just say that. I mean that. All power to the people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow. But, you know, I can say that until I turn blue. But the fact is, as you mentioned, Emiliano Zapata, okay, Ernesto Che Guevara, Fidel, and I can go on and on and on, Ho Chi Minh, on and on and on. But the fact of the matter is, they recognized that in order to change things, they had to do things. I repeat, in order to change things systemically, they had to do things. And I am disgusted at the pathetic situation that we black people in particular have allowed ourselves to degenerate into. We have become willing slaves, whether it's on whatever party, especially the Democratic so-called, and I say so-called, Democratic Party plantation, okay, because we just love being slaves. Oh, Massa, yeah, what can I do, Massa? We sick, as Brother Malcolm said. We sick. We shouldn't be sick. There was a time that black Americans were indeed the conscience of this country.
True that.
Now, so many of us have become the posteria, the asinine posteria of this country. What has happened? I'll tell you what has happened. We have allowed ourselves to have been duped. We have come to love being on the plantation, and as in the words of Harriet Tubman, I freed 1,000 slaves. I could have freed 1,000 more if only they knew that they were slaves. You dig? And even today, more so today in the year 2016, on November 8th, we are slaves. But we are slaves because so many of us are willing to be slaves on the plantation. We have got to change that, and only we. The Democratic and Republican parties can't change that, and certainly not the Democrats. Lyndon B. Johnson said, and I quote, niggers, and I use that word, this is a direct quote, niggers will vote for 100 years for the Democratic Party because of our, quote, civil rights legislation, end of quote. Guess what? That civil rights legislation means and meant absolutely nothing, zero. As Brother Malcolm X, Alhaj Malik El-Shabazz said, the ballot or the bullet. The bottom line, it is time for we people, black, white, brown, red, and yellow, to wake up and understand that we have an obligation, a duty, a responsibility for our political prisoners who fought for us, okay, who died for us. Many are still alive, suffering in the U.S. prison gulags of this country. What are we going to do? Are we going to be patsies? Are we going to be chumps and punks, or are we going to be human beings, women and men, standing up saying, no more, no more. It is time for systemic change. So that's really, at this point, all I want to say at this point. I want to thank you, my brother Ralph, my sister Betty, you know, my sister Lynn Stewart, love you, Lynn, my sister Ann, and all the rest who will be on this program. The struggle, as you said, Brother Ralph, continues. And I will say, not only does it continue, but it intensifies. It intensifies on all levels. We will continue to be oppressed as long as we allow ourselves to be economically, socially, and politically as well as culturally oppressed, as long as we allow that to happen, to be. So I'm going to end here by saying thank you, my brother. Thank you, my sisters. All power to the people. And, of course, as always, I will be listening to the rest of the program. Love you all. All power to the people.
All power.
Thank you so much for that, Brother Larry Pinckney. But the elections mean to me is a measure of our success and our failure in winning the hearts and the minds of the people. But what we must remember that is not on television, the fact of the matter that the people who have not come out to vote for the Democratic Party, and millions, billions are spent to get black people to vote whenever they need the vote, but very little is spent in uplifting or carrying out the promises that were made to people to get their vote. As we must remember, when President Obama first ran many years ago, he was talking about war crimes against Bush. He was talking about single-payer health care. And the moment he was elected, he said instantly, the two main issues of his election, or his selection by the people, or his ability to get the votes of people after he was selected, he said, they're off the table. Shall we expect any better in this election? But what we can do is be very careful in analyzing the results of this election to see what we have gained, what we have lost, and where we must go. And at that, I'm going to ask Sister Lynn to give us her thoughts on this election. Are you there, oh, Sister Lynn?
I'm here, Ralph, and as you can hear and you know, that one of those killer viruses the children like to bring home from school for us older people. And my great-grandson, our great-grandson, Connor, got me infected, so my voice is completely shot. Things I want to say about this election, which is interesting, and one saddened thing that I saw before I turned off the television, not to turn it on again, was that more black people are voting in this election than ever voted in any other election, including Obama. And that is indeed a sad, sad thing. And it's not because of civic interest. It's not because of Black is Back. It's because that desire to be part of the greater American picture. They'd rather be the man than beat the man. They'd rather be the oppressor than not be part of the American, quote, dream. I do want to say one thing, calling people's attention to the way the system works, and it works so effectively. And I think as long as we understand that, if we don't understand how this system works, then we're doomed to just go on repeating it endlessly. And I wanted to say that, you know, I can't vote. I can't vote because New York State, this so-called progressive state, does not allow felons to vote.
That's right.
We are not permitted to vote. Other states, there are voters. They have people in the jails are organized to vote. But in New York, we are not permitted to vote. And that is just a continuation of Michelle Alexander's outlook on this entire thing, that the jails and the prisons are used to keep people from participating ever again. They are kept out of participation. Now, if people could understand that and start building their own participation in their own community, let's bring back Tulsa. Let's bring back Rosecroft, the town
Rosewood.
In Florida.
It's Rosewood.
Rosewood,
thank you. Let's start doing that individualistic, we'll do it ourselves. Ralph likes to quote, and I think it's appropriate to quote on an election night, that black people are never going to be free because Hillary gets elected or Donald gets elected. They are only going to be free when none but ourselves are the liberators. That was the watchword in Zimbabwe under Mugabe. And, of course, he has been demonized now by the Americans. But I want to just repeat, we are in that same exact position. If we don't liberate ourselves, no one else is going to do it. And if we don't start building something very soon, we are not going to, as Ralph says, it never was written anywhere that we had to win. So let's start building, let's start doing, let's hold whoever is elected, let's hold all their feet to the fire, these newly elected, these senators, these representatives. That's who we have to get at. That's who we have to get to, because I think, and Ralph is so right, our first line of attack has got to be free our political prisoners. Bring them home. And on that note, I say, we're going to wake up tomorrow morning, and you know what? Nothing will be changed. Thanks, Ralph.
Thank you so much for that, Lynn. We must understand that what none but ourselves means. It means freedom is never given. Freedom was never won with a vote. And we have to make people understand that. But I am very hopeful, because in Washington, D.C., 2 days ago, when those most oppressed people were brought together, those people whose children were murdered by the police, and when Betty Davis and I stood up at the end of the program of the Black is Back gathering, the action of bringing those people together, when we said, how do we change this circumstance? And we said, you must begin with the local elections. You don't have to go to the congressman. You don't have to go to the mayor. Go to your neighbor who has a child in school. Sit down with that neighbor and organize, and you will have people who are truly on your side, and build that with none but ourselves. And I will tell you, people ran to get our names and addresses as to see how we can help. We had young teachers come to this Black is Back National Convention, whose theme was, we have no issues that anyone is discussing in this election, and so therefore we will not participate, other than to say, free our political prisoners as presidential issues, and reparations as vice presidential issues. We had 21 demands, but there are many politicians, or so-called politicians, who are in the black community saying it is too late for demands. And when it is too late for demands, it is too late for political involvement. I don't believe any of that.
Brother Ralph,
yes.
Can I say, this is Larry, can I just say very quickly, and I'm so glad you said so-called politicians, because what they are in fact political pimps. Let's be clear about what they are. They are political pimps and bloodsuckers. And yes, I'm talking about the so-called black politicians. They are political pimps. We need to understand that. You are so correct. Only we can free ourselves from our political, social, and economic chains. Only we. How dare we expect someone else to do that? Only we can do that. And let me shut up. But thank you, Brother Ralph. Thank you.
Ralph, as you said it so well yourself, you put it to us about a couple of weeks ago. You said the cowardly caucus of color, Congress. And I think that's good to remember because they are a cowardly caucus. And if we're going to get anybody to fight for our political prisoners along with us, it's going to be local, grassroots, the guys down here who depend on us to get elected. Not Congress, but down here in the cities, in the states, in the little towns. We must impose on them our will. Thank you.
And as the Puerto Rican brothers and sisters imposed on their political politicians, so-called politicians, they freed their political prisoners, except Oscar Lopez Rivera. And I must say that Charles Barron here in the city has been a proponent of the freedom of our political prisoners. And isn't that shameful that we have merely Charles Barron, the only one in New York politics that dares to mention political prisoners? And so we must support Charles for that, and we must go on to other political situations and force the local politicians to do the same. Betty, do you have something to say to that?
One of the things I would like to say is that Brother Charles was at our national state convention, our New York State convention, rather, and he helped connect the dots, and he made the point that it is where the local politicians are. We need to come out, and we need to educate our people as to who are our friends and who are our enemies. And I want to reiterate that Brother Ralph Pointer started off by saying, we fought for education, community control of schools. That was one of the main platform issues for the Black Panthers. And these brothers who were responsible for the free breakfast program and the free lunch program in our public school system, what was their reward? They were incarcerated, and they are still incarcerated. And people like Obama are standing on the shoulders of these people. And we are saying we should, instead of running for a Democratic Party slot, you should run for the control of education and the control of that education budget. In some states, Black people are 90% of the public school system, and they should get 90% of that money in the form of contracts and jobs. And when you do that, you can chop the Dixiecrats down to size. This is what the liberation struggle was about. And wherever you have a liberation struggle, you have political prisoners. And this is whether you're fighting for ecology, against landlords, for the planet, for food, for jobs. Wherever you have a struggle, the capitalist system is going to incarcerate and kill you. And it is up to us to free our political prisoners. Because when you educate people as to why to free a political prisoner, you are educating them as to the issues of a liberation struggle. The two go hand in hand. And it is us who know that it falls upon the shoulders to do and to act. And I want to just take a moment before I introduce Sister Ann Lamb to give you an announcement. You must know that a punch to the gut, another killer cop got free. The decision of the Brooklyn District Attorney's Office was to uphold and cover up the 1994 murder of Nicholas Haywood Jr.
Oh, man.
And we are demanding that anybody of goodwill and conscience, regardless of your political persuasion, left, right, center, you know this is unjust. We are having a protest on November 10th at 12 noon at the Brooklyn DA's office, 350 J Street in Brooklyn. But we're asking for anyone who hears this broadcast, would you please, even if it's just two people, stand in front of the district attorney's office in your state, in your city, and say, let's bring these killer cops to jail. The whole damn system is totally corrupt. Indict, convict, send these killer cops to jail. Without further ado, I want to introduce to you Sister Ann Lamb, and one of the things I want to ask her is, do any of our political prisoners have thoughts that she can share about this election circus? And I want to remind everyone in the audience that the Ralph What's Happening blog program, we started off our program by saying the empire is collapsing, and we were giving you an analytical example by using the 2016 election. So we want to prepare you for Tom Syracuse and the fact that we told you the voter and election issues of this circus they call a 2016 campaign is merely a mirror image of the collapse of a corrupt, evil empire. Sister Ann, can you tell us if any of our political prisoners shared any of their concerns with you regarding our political process? Thank you.
Well, one of the things that several of them have brought to my attention, which is a very interesting bit of history, and we should all know it, is about the Electoral College, which was actually originally formed so that states with slaves could count their slaves as three-fifths of a human and therefore have a larger population and therefore have more people to vote in the Electoral College. Now, this is extremely interesting because we're still using this anachronistic, disgusting Electoral College crap. Well, I don't know if they're still counting the slaves. They may well still be counting the slaves because I know here in New York State, where all the prisons are, that is where these people are counted as living. So all these prisoners who are all scattered throughout upstate New York in these gulags, most of whom come from here in New York City, are not counted as being residents of where they actually live. They're counted as being residents of the town in which the prison is. So this still goes on in a certain way, right? So
right, and I think you have to be very clear that that's for the purpose of receiving money. They
right.
are counted as residents of places like Franklin County and St. Lawrence County.
Right.
But actually, they're never permitted to have a vote.
Oh, I know. They can't vote at all.
Permitted to vote.
They're Thanks. Never allowed to vote for the rest of their lives, as far as I know. But the
but
thing is,
the
just,
money...
The
federal money that is allotted to areas based on population, the population of the prisoners are counted as
exactly.
people living in that area, and therefore get larger amounts of federal money to spend, and I might say, with my experience in Franklin County, in a racist manner.
Yes.
For the benefit. Of the people in that county who are 99% white, and the population of the prisons is far too many.
Right.
Thank you. Sorry
I mean,
to interrupt you,
Ann. It's a different, you know, it's a different thing because, you know, the Electoral College wasn't money, it was votes, but it's still power. Right?
Still power.
It's still power,
power
however you look at it. And I do have an announcement about one of our political prisoners. Imam Jamil Al-Amin, formerly known as H. Rap Brown, somebody who certainly has sacrificed for the community, as Larry was saying earlier, has a court date coming up. He has a habeas corpus petition that he has been given a court date in Atlanta. Now, according to the information I received, that was to be November 17th at 10:30 a.m. Howsomever, while we were on the show and I was listening in, I was checking out what the court said, and the court is saying that it's not that day, it's the next day. So tomorrow I will call the clerk of the court, and I will find out exactly what day this is being held, because we don't want people to go to pack the courtroom in Atlanta and then find out it's not that day, it's the next day, right? It was supposed to be the 17th. It's a habeas petition that he's had in for quite some time. By the number, it would be since 2012. And so he's supposed to be having this habeas hearing. Now, whether or not that means he's going to be there, I don't know. But we are asking people to join us in the courtroom. We have the courtroom. It is the courtroom, Richard B. Russell Federal Building and United States Courthouse at 75 Ted Turner Drive in Atlanta, Georgia. Courtroom CR2308. The only thing is it's supposed to be on the 17th at 10:30 a.m., according to the information we received. But I was just up on the court's website, and they are listing it as the 18th. So I think it would behoove me tomorrow morning to call up the clerk of the court and ask that question. I have the case number. I have the case name, you know, so I can just say, excuse me, could you tell me, according to what you have on the court website, this is on the 18th, according to what we have been told, it's on the 17th. So could you please confirm for me which day it is? You know, we'll find out. But anyway, that will be coming up. That should be a very important hearing. That's a habeas petition. That could actually, you know, there's a lot of information in that habeas petition, so I'm going to try to get it. So I have the whole thing in front of me, so when, you know, I can post it up to the website, people can read it, see what's going on. But this is the first movement we've had in his case for a while. So it would behoove us, A, to pay attention. You know, we don't all live in Atlanta, Georgia. We can't all run down to the courthouse. But we do have many people in Atlanta who I'm sure I'm going to call Masai when I get off the phone here, too, just to see if he knows which date it is. Because if they're putting out that it's the 17th, that's not so bad. You go on the 17th and it's the next day. You don't want to put out the 18th and you go on the 18th and it was the previous day, right? So we'll have to find out, but I will definitely find out as soon as possible. And then I'll post it up to JerichoNY.org and theJerichoMovement.com so people can find the information. But that was an exciting news to get. You know, I was like, oh, this is interesting. And,
okay.
You know.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
that's
what a lot of the prisoners were talking about, was sort of trying to make that parallel between, you know, they say, we know it's not money, you know, it wasn't money then, it was power, political power, and, you know, here we are counting each slave, somebody's property, as three-fifths of a human, right? Now they're somebody's property, they're property of the state. Sekou Odinga was once told this when he was up at Dannemora. He was out in the yard, it was very cold. They didn't let him have gloves or anything. You know, it's wintertime in Dannemora. You know how cold it gets up there. And so he has to go back inside. And the CO said, why? And he said, well, my hands are getting frostbitten. So the CO said, oh, you must come in immediately. We can't have any damage to the property of the state. So, you know, they're very clear about it.
Yes, they understand clearly. And if we could only get that understanding by the people who are most oppressed by this system.
Exactly.
But that is our job, and I would say we're working very hard at it, and we must continue, because every day is a day too many for our political prisoners.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to drop off there, and we're going to go to Tom Syracuse, who's very much involved in the electoral process.
Yes.
Syracuse, do you have any words of wisdom to tell us about this evening's, this thing's, I don't know what you would call it. And hang in there, Joel.
Well, I've been hearing a lot of words of wisdom on this call. I've heard no words of wisdom in this campaign. Lynn Stewart rightly points out that those people who are in prison or who are released from prison, many of them on trumped up charges, a play on the word Trump, they're not allowed to vote, and also Larry Pinckney said this system we have is not a democracy, but a hypocrisy, and he's right on with that. The fact of the matter is that this country was not founded as a democracy. The word democracy does not appear in our Declaration of Independence. It does not appear in the Constitution. And many of our founding fathers, such as James Madison, put down the word democracy. He called rule of the majority rule of the mob. This country was organized after the revolution as a plutocracy, and it has been such ever since. And unfortunately, the American public keeps falling for all of this these lies. White working class falling for the lies of Trump, who claims that he is not part of the ruling establishment, that he is independent of Wall Street, that he will not allow the outsourcing of our economy, that he all of this stuff, all of that is a lie. And then you have people of color and progressives falling for the lies of Hillary Clinton, who claims that she is the lesser of the two evils, that she is not a racist. The fact of the matter is, how can anybody who is in the working class support a party, whether it's Republican or Democrat, that is controlled by the power elite in Wall Street? It is an impossibility. It is a contradiction that any party that's controlled by this power elite can do anything in the interests of the working class. And unfortunately, people have fallen for all of these lies. And until the American public will realize, when Trump says we have to make this country great again, what does he mean by the word great? Does he mean a country great because it stands for freedom, it stands for justice, it stands for peace? No. What he really means is that we have to go back to a time when the whites controlled everything. Well, the fact of the matter is, the majority of whites never controlled anything in this country. It was always a minority of the white elite. And then when Clinton says that we're going to make this country great in the future, what is she talking about great? Is she talking about freedom, justice, and peace? This candidate is a dangerous warmonger. You know, the hypocrisy knows no limit. Here we have people, political prisoners, that have been put in prison unjustly on trumped-up charges. They're not allowed to vote. And we have people who are criminals, like Trump and like Hillary Clinton, who was instrumental and is instrumental in the murder of millions of people throughout the world through her imperial foreign policy. And, of course, she's looked upon as an example of a progressive. And then you have Trump, who brags about not paying taxes, who brags about going bankrupt and making money off that, and who knows how many people's lives have been ruined by him. These people, of course, not only can vote, but they are the leading candidates of the two corporate parties, while decent people are languishing in jail or they have been disenfranchised. Now, the majority of people in this country, when this country first became a plutocratic republic, could not vote. And the fact of the matter is, the majority of people living in this country today cannot vote for one reason or another. Either they've been convicted of crimes or they're in prison, or they've been living here, whether they're living here as documented or undocumented, they cannot vote, even though they're law-abiding citizens and they work hard, they cannot vote. People living, many indigenous people living on reservations, they cannot vote. Many people have been disenfranchised for one reason or another. So the fact, and then you have a lot of people who have become so disgusted and so cynical, they refuse to vote. So the majority of people in this country have been disenfranchised, just like it was when this country was first founded. And until people realize this, and until people reject this political and economic system and form a movement, a coalition of all races that are going to fight for freedom, peace, and justice, we're going to continue having falling victim, as Larry so pointedly pointed out, to the pimps, to all of these politicians who are nothing more than tools of the ruling elite.
But thank you for that, Tom, and I'm going to switch over to a bright spot of those who are joining this struggle. And we're going to switch to upstate New York, to Rochester, where Ricardo and Mary Adams, who are doing the work that must be done to gain the hearts and minds of the people and to work on schools. Mary, Ricardo, are you there with us?
Yeah, Mary's here. Ricardo's off to work, sorry to say. Can you hear me?
That's all right, Mary. What you are thinking about this electoral process this evening?
Well, I guess I can tell you what's going on in Rochester tonight. There's this episode of collective effervescence over at the cemetery where people are gathering around Susan B. Anthony's grave, and they're all excited, and thousands of people have been thronging over there all day, and I guess it feels a little, I don't know, it feels a little alienating to me. I'm not exactly enthused.
Well, we have to say that Susan B. Anthony moved a group of people forward. That is women. She worked on the women's right to vote. But at the last minute, with the black women who were working with her, she felt that she had to leave them behind in order to have a successful movement. And that movement was successful. Women did get the right to vote, except black women did not get the right to vote. So we must cheer on our sisters who did get the right to vote and work for them to understand the plight of all of our sisters. And I'm not talking about Margaret Thatcher or Clinton or any of those other warmongers.
Or Condoleezza Rice.
Or Condoleezza.
Or Loretta Lynch.
Or Loretta Lynch.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Mary Adams, who are working hard to make this system a more just system.
And let's not forget Fannie Lou. Without further ado, Brother Joel, your mic is open. Can you give us some enlightenment, please?
Brother Joel, I think your microphone has gone out, and so let us continue.
Brother Joel,
Hello? Is this better?
Yes, we hear you.
Oh, okay. Sometimes this phone has to be shaken up a little bit before it works properly, but okay. So anyway, it looks to me from what people have told me that Trump seems to be sweeping the Electoral College vote. And it's I won't put any hope in the Hillarys of the world. In fact, in some ways, like, for example, she's headlong for plunging this country into World War III over Syria, over the Ukraine. She's been, she actually pushed the Obama administration over the top. And during the debates, she was advocating a no-fly zone over Syria, and she said that she would shoot down the Russian planes if they violated the no-fly zone that they declared as part of their invasion of Syria. And so, in certain, and actually, Trump on that particular issue sounded more like common sense. He said, "What are we doing there in the first place? Why are we bombing those people? Shouldn't we have peace with Putin, or at least some way of being friends with Russia instead of World War III?" She didn't even deny that that's what her policies would lead to directly. Not that he would that he could be trusted for a minute to do anything different once he got into power. But at any rate, the country is moving into more and more into a direction and spirit of war and fascism on both both of the parties. And many people thought they could support Hillary as the lesser of the evils. The problem also is that the imperialist corruption is too it's greater than many people who have the idea of and who apply it in an oversimplified way, that the working class is somehow above being corrupted by imperialism. And we see that like a lot of the when Trump says he'll make America great again, he's referring to a period after World War II, when almost all other countries were leveled industrially, and the United States was the lord of the manor of the entire globe, and the benefits began coming in, cheap resources stolen from the rest of the world by the billions and trillions worth, and brought to this country. And then enough of that distributed to people to feel that conditions are improving, that, wow, this is a really liberal system. They stopped using the word working class. They began using the word middle class. And in a certain way, it fits because by the corruption, by being given a certain share of the super profits, a lot of people that might normally think imperialism is wrong and so on, under the influence of being rewarded by it and getting benefits from it, they began to imagine what a great country this is. We can rob the rest of the world with impunity. Nobody can challenge us. And so now that other forces in the world are reemerging, the U.S. has been defeated in Vietnam. It's been stalemated in Korea. So now he wants to, he's again appealing to rebuild imperialism and robbing the rest of the world like never before. He says he wants to build a military bigger and stronger than ever. And that's what he's referring to, imperial domination, and implicitly implying to the middle class that they could be in the middle. They may not be among the richest of the rich, but they can get benefits by plundering the rest of the world.
Oil. But as you said, the world has changed. It is not 1946, and it will never go back to 1946 again. And I think with that commentary, with that analysis, we are coming to the end of another program, and look forward to hearing you and talking about what has happened next Tuesday.
just want to remind you, the International Action Center, the Workers' World Party, will be having their annual convention at Alhambra up in Harlem, and we hope that you will be there Friday from 6 to 9, Saturday from 9 to 6, and Sunday from 9 to 3. Remember, the Workers' World Party is having their convention. And with that, we're going to say goodnight, and thank you, Raj. We really appreciate in the cemetery. For Halloween.
Share